So Article 40, the redaction of 1914 is fairly similar to the one you'll have in the back of the Psalter. I'm just going to read the 1914 version. The deacons shall meet wherever necessary every week to transact the business pertaining to their office, calling upon the name of God, whereunto the ministers shall take good heed, and if necessary, they shall be present. There's basically two principles, actually three, that we need to identify in this brief article. Number one, deacons should meet frequently. In one sense, you meet every week. I mean, you gather the alms from the church on a weekly basis. But in those days, you know, with the village churches and people living in close proximity, larger congregations, the deacons would often have to meet every week to keep up with the congregation and the needs of the congregation and to discuss those needs. They didn't have email, they didn't have telephones, they didn't have anything. So if you didn't meet, you didn't talk, and if you didn't talk, it didn't work. So, but I think we can take away the general principle that frequency is important. We should never let that charge drift too long. There should be ever a vigilance and a conversation among the deacons. Have you noticed anything? Has anybody approached you? Are there things we ought to be concerned about? Are there needs maybe perhaps outside the church that we need to be considering? So, frequency. Second of all, calling upon the name of God. I trust that whenever the deacons gather together, whether it's for family visits or whether it's to conduct your business by yourselves, that prayer is offered, because we certainly want to invite the Lord and call upon the Lord in all matters pertaining to His church. Thirdly, the church order says ministers. I think the general principle is there needs to be a kind of an overseeing of the overseeing. So part of the ways that has been accomplished for us, for example, is every time we have a council meeting, we have a deacon's report, and you men give an accounting of your work in general terms. It isn't necessary for us to know the particulars, say, of diaconal assistance, although in cases where you need advice, we can always do that. In closed session. But I think the sense is the deacons should never be off by themselves entirely. There should be financial accounting, which you men provide through reports. There should be discussion, which you men provide on that agenda item. And once a year, and I'm just thinking now, did we miss that? I think we did. Once a year, there needs to be an accounting of the books, right, where we audit the books by a couple of members.
We already been a year?
I believe so. I believe the last time we did it was late last winter. You can check.
Last time we had Joe and Scott.
Right. That was about a year ago, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah. So I'm thinking that maybe I might want me to make a note of that. That at the...
Before I was actually elected.
Right. That's right. It was. So if we could... you know, perhaps you could think of a couple of men to call upon, or we could solicit at the male members meeting coming up. That would be good. But the idea, and it isn't, you know, even though Article 40 is about the deacons, fact of the matter is, the same is required of elders and ministers. If you read the form for the ordination and installation of ministers and elders, there is this mutual accountability among ourselves. So even though we are members of the church and accountable in that respect to office bearers, we're also accountable in our official duties as well. One of those manifestations is censor amorum that we conduct periodically. Others would be, when we discuss matters among ourselves and speak to each other about concerns we might have. So those three principles, I think, are there in Article 40. Frequency, prayer, and the deacon's work, and accountability or oversight. Any questions on Article 40? Okay, Article 41 is a very important one, And it'll help, not that any of the other ones aren't important, but this will help us to understand a little bit more about broader assemblies. So I'll just read the redaction of 1914. The classical meetings, or meetings of classes, shall consist of neighboring churches that respectively delegate with proper credentials a minister and an elder to meet at such time and place as was determined by the previous classical meeting. I'll just pause there. You remember how, at least in the Netherlands, there were classis meetings, which were local regions. So let's just say we had 15 churches in Arkansas and Missouri. There would be a classis South Central, something like that. There would be a classis East. There would be a classis Far West. We have these geographic gatherings of the churches. Notice that the only persons that can really attend in an official capacity are those who have been delegated. Now that's important. You may remember in our talk at the Sunday school, if you were present for that, that it's not like the people at classes are super elders or super ministers, somehow higher than their brethren who are back home. They are there to represent their consistories, their church councils. And that's why typically when you go to a classis or a synod meeting, you go with what's called instructions. Instructions means, okay, these are the issues that were presented to us on the agenda. We discuss those. Then we send our delegates with our mind, our collective opinion on that subject. Now, a common mistake in the past that every now and then resurfaces, sometimes consistories tried to bind the vote of their delegates and saying you have to vote on this issue this way. That's incorrect. They should forcefully represent their consistory's opinion, but the whole point of a deliberative body is to hear the collective wisdom of other churches. And we don't have that when we meet as a council to discuss synod points. We only have our take on what's presented. And so we don't know what the Grand Rapids Consistory discussed and decided on that matter, or Chilliwack, or someplace else. So when we get to synod, the understanding is the delegates normally would vote according to what the local consistory or council's mind is. However, if they're persuaded by the multitude of counselors in which there's wisdom, then they need to come back and explain to the council why they didn't vote the way the council suggested they do. So they're not bound to vote a certain way, but they do need to give an explanation based on what they heard why they voted the way they did. Any questions about that? So if you show up at a meeting, and this is almost an annual chuckle, if you don't come with your official form that says you've been delegated by the church to represent them, we always give those people a hard time. You know, we kind of look around the room and smile and say, you know, should we seat them at the table, or should we just, you know, eliminate that church from the meeting this time around just to teach them a lesson? And usually, you know, somebody forgot their form or something. I've never seen a case where people haven't been delegated. What you normally see is they forgot their paper with the proper signatures and stuff on it. But that's an important principle, right? Delegation, which is really representation, which is really they are there to be the mouthpiece of the local consistory, but they're not bound to vote in a certain way. Okay, that's the whole nature of a deliberative body. Secondly, you know, it's a minor point, but the time and place is always agreed upon at the previous meetings. Let me continue my reading. Such meeting shall be held at least once in 3 months, unless great distances render this inadvisable. In these meetings, the minister shall preside in rotation, or one shall be chosen to preside. However, the same minister shall not be chosen twice in succession. That's actually held to. We have an alphabetical rotation of chairman. We never have the same person go twice. And you know, sometimes there are men who are a little more gifted at leading a meeting of that kind than others. So there have been times in the past where we deviated from a strict alphabetical rotation and simply voted on people, but we always adhered to the not two in a row meeting rule. Once in 3 months, you know, there was a time we held classis meetings twice a year. The amount of business that needed to be transacted began to diminish once the denomination was set up and committees were functioning. So it was deemed unnecessary to have twice a year meetings, and the expense, of course, because of the enormous distances, is quite considerable. So that's not something that can't be reversed. I think at such time as we feel the agendas get too unwieldy, we probably would go back to a twice a year meeting. Any questions on those things so far? Josh?
How do they determine where?
That's by rotation too.
Okay.
Now, it's a peculiar rotation, and that evolved over the years too. It used to be the three larger churches, St. Catherine's, I'm sorry, now that I'm showing how old I am, Jordan, Burgessville, and Grand Rapids, because quite honestly, those were, in the beginning, the only three churches there were, and they were basically only churches that could accommodate that many people as guests. Since then, the other churches have developed, have grown, and have had a desire to have their people able to sit in and see how those meetings go, and have their local elders and deacons be able to attend as visitors, because that was always very difficult when the meetings were far away from where you were. Basically, the local elders of that church would be there, and just the delegates from the other churches would be there, and the people would never get to see a classis or synod meeting ever. So what we finally developed is we rotate every other meeting. So like, let's just say the odd years, I don't know what it is, but the odd years would rotate between those three larger churches. Then on the off year, we would rotate among all the other churches alphabetically. So we've had already a classis meeting in Hull, we've had a classis meeting in New Jersey, we've had a classis meeting in Chilliwack. And we are now on the list to be in that rotation as well. So when our turn comes up, we will be able to host such a thing. So that's kind of the way that works. So this way we're trying to get all the churches involved without ballooning the expenses. You know, if we always had meetings way out in the far west or way out in the far east, it would be a sizable expense overall. So we're trying to balance all those considerations. Then you'll notice as well, there are certain things which need to be dealt with. The redaction is actually quite different than the original, so you might want to listen to this. Furthermore, the president shall, among other things, put the following questions to the delegates of each church. Are the consistory meetings held in your church? Is church discipline exercised? Are the poor and the Christian schools cared for? Do you need the judgment and help of classes for the proper government of your church? And finally, at one but the last meeting, and if necessary, at the last meeting before particular synods, delegates are chosen to attend the synod. Now, I'm going to give you a little pop quiz. Those little questions about is church discipline exercised, are consistory meetings held, are the schools cared for, you've heard them before. What setting?
Church visitation.
Church visitation. So instead of at classes or synod meetings going through every church and asking all those questions, we now make use of the article, the moderator and an elder from the church that oversees the other church to come once in 2 years and to go through that whole list of questions, which is kind of like a checkup. So how many of you were here for a church visitation? Okay, just you were here. Yeah. So there's a whole printed list of questions, questions concerning the elders, questions concerning the deacons, questions concerning the ministers, questions about Christian education, questions about all kinds of things. And it's pretty much a checkup to make sure the churches are doing what they say they're supposed to do. So these questions in Article 41 that used to be asked at the meetings, now the moderator of the church and an elder go do all that and then write a report, and that's presented to classes or to synod, and that report is read. And generally it'll say, you know, things were in good order, some advice was asked for and given, you know, things like that. If there are issues of concern, those would be raised at synod. If a church is somehow going off the rails in some area or another, or if there's questions that the delegates couldn't answer, those would be brought to synod. The purpose of this, of course, is accountability. This is one way that the churches keep an eye on each other to make sure that the local office bearers are doing what they're called to do and that the church is functioning in a regular way according to our agreed upon standards.
John? Should we have that list?
You should have it. You don't have it? Okay. I will make a note to make sure you do. Because
it's hard to answer questions if you don't even know if you're doing those.
Well, you definitely would have them in your hands if we knew that church visitation. We give them way.
But if we're not doing that, there's nothing
right.
I can do about it, bro.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
Right. It's good to know ahead of time, right? And actually, there's no reason not to give the whole membership those questions because there's nothing to hide about them. They're what they should be expecting.
So they can be sent to everybody.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll send them to the membership for sure.
Yeah.
Because the accountability needs to be at that level too. Any other questions on this article? I hope at this point you're getting a real good sense of why what's known as the Presbyterian form of church government is so particularly helpful and such a blessing. There are just layers and layers of accountability, mutual assistance. You know, lest we think that, you know, you feel like you're under an examination or put up against the wall, these meetings are usually very friendly, very brotherly, very helpful. You know, you can ask advice of the delegates, and I've always found it to be, as the Dutch say, gezellig, you know, just really good fellowship. Article 42, the last one for this morning. Where in a church there are more ministers than one, also those not delegated according to the foregoing article should have the right to attend classes with advisory vote. And that's exactly what we do. In congregations that have more than one minister, one of them would be delegated to have a voting role along with the elder who's there. But then even if a church has five ministers, the five ministers would all be seated at the synod meeting table, but only one of them, whoever was delegated by the constituent, would have a vote. Otherwise, the obvious would happen. You would have a very unbalanced representation at meetings. And quite honestly, in the old days, it happened. I don't know if any of you were at some of the early meetings, but the bigger churches had bigger delegations and the smaller churches had smaller ones, and the vote would show accordingly.
Well, you could even the conference meeting that I attended, even though that was certainly not happening, you could see the great potential for that.
Yeah. And you would, even in conversations, well,
yeah.
You know, we represent 2/5 of the population of the HRC.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, that's supposed to mean what? So, you know, that, you know, so this was built in there to make sure that the larger churches don't, you know, lord it over the smaller churches and so on. But they're there for an advisory role, and that's always helpful. Any questions on that?